Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Final version of pianist Frank Kimbrough's Palmetto release 2003 to 2006 is out now. This release includes the pianist's 2003 Lullablueby with bassist Ben Allison and drummer Matt Wilson, and his 2006 follow-up Play with bassist Masa Kamaguchi and drummer Paul Motion. For more information, palmetto-records.com. The Baylor Project has been nominated for a second time for an NAACP Image Award in the Outstanding Jazz Album Vocal category for their September 2002 release, The Evening, Live at Apparatus. The 54th annual NAACP Image Awards will take place on February 25th at 8 p.m. EST on BET. For more information, naacpimageawards.net. Events this evening, Thursday, January 19th. Saxophonist, composer, and MacArthur Fellow Miguel Zignon continues his national tour to celebrate Musica de las Americas, his Grammy-nominated new album of all original works inspired by his passion for the history of the American continent at the Dakota in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and tomorrow night at Folly Theater in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, Miguel Zignon. At the Stone in New York City, Quartet 2, Nate Woolley on trumpet, James Brandon Lewis on tenor saxophone, Shahzad Ismaili on bass and electronics, and Chez Smith on drums, percussion, and electronics. For more information, thestonenyc.com. At Elastic Arts in Chicago, the improvised music series presents Dave Rempis on saxophone, Jason Adasiewicz on vibes, Joshua Abrams on bass, and Tyler Damon on drums. The show begins at 8:30 p.m. CST. For more information, elasticarts.org. Performing at the Blue Note Jazz Club in New York City, tonight through Sunday, January 22nd, DJ Logic and Friends. For more information, bluenotejazz.com. And Improv Nights at Roulette in Brooklyn, New York presents a tribute to Derek Bailey, tonight through Saturday, January 21st. And on Tuesday, January 24th, bassist Michael Formanak's Drome Trio, featuring pianist Angelica Sanchez. For more information, roulette.org. The group Third Coast Percussion premieres new works featuring movement artists John Boogs and Lil Buck at Zank Hall Center Stage inside of Carnegie Hall in New York City tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. For more information, carnegiehall.org. Vocalist Tammy Brown, pianist Dan Zemelman, and violinist Mads Tolan perform in The Lost American Jazz Book, a benefit for new music works at Kumbwa Jazz in Santa Cruz, California, this Saturday, January 21st. For more information, kumbwajazz.org. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tomorrow night through Sunday, January 22nd, the Houston Person Quintet. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club on Sunday, January 22nd, the Adam Birnbaum Quartet. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. This Friday and Saturday night, January 20th and 21st, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, the Mike LaDon Organ Quintet for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. The Center for New Music in San Francisco, California presents bass clarinetist Ross Dunlop's Sense of Place on Saturday, January 21st, 4:30 p.m. PST. For more information, centerfornewmusic.com/event. And trombonist Conrad Herwig and the Latin Side All-Stars continue their residency at the Django inside of the Roxy Hotel in New York City, celebrating 25-plus years of the Latin Side, a series of albums of the music of iconic jazz artists with a Latin tinge. The residency runs through the end of March. Their next appearance will be next Tuesday, January 24th. For more information, thedjangonyc.com. And now for new and upcoming releases. Bassist Richie Goods and vibraphonist Qian Qian Lu's self-released Connected. Reed player Mark Ortwine's It Was Time on Terra Voce. Saxophonist George Winstone's self-release Odysseus. Drummer Francisco Mela's Music Frees Our Souls Volume 2 on 577. Vocalist Libby York's Dreamland on Origin. And pianist Kenny Barron's The Source on Artwork. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My guest is Daniel Peck, executive producer and host of Live at the Bop Stop. In 2019, the Bop Stop was the winner of the All About Jazz's Best Jazz Venue in America. The venue, located in Cleveland, Ohio, is now opening its archives of live recordings to present a one-hour weekly live jazz performance show available to non-commercial, community, educational, and jazz-formatted radio stations. So, Daniel, I want to thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Yes. So, the Bop Stop at the Music Settlement. Mm-hmm. For almost 10 years, the Bop Stop has operated under, within, part of the Music Settlement.
Yeah. So, the club itself has a longer story than that 10 years. And so, it opened in 1991. There have been three iterations of it, and it was... it was originally a privately owned club. It opened on the east side of Cleveland. For a while, it was in what would be considered the warehouse district. And then they built a brand new jazz club from the ground up in what would be considered the Ohio City neighborhood portion of Cleveland in the early 2000s. And it operated under private auspices for the better part of that decade. And then the owners, the original for-profit owners, decided to close it. And the story goes that they had some people walk in and they were going to turn it into a restaurant. And the guy who was going to be the chef of that restaurant said, "Man, now all I have to do is figure out how to rip out this stage." And then the owners at the time, who loved jazz, called the Music Settlement, which is it's a nonprofit that's been around in Cleveland for over 100 years. They called them up and said, "Hey, I don't want to turn this into a restaurant. I'd like it to continue to be a musical performance space." And so the Music Settlement took it on. And so it operates as a nonprofit, technically a nonprofit performance space, but jazz club for the most part today. The Music Settlement started as a way to welcome immigrants to Cleveland. And particularly it started as a way for primarily Eastern European immigrants who moved to Northeast Ohio to gather and play instruments. And it, you know, that sort of evolved into music lessons and just generally ways in which musical performance groups could reach out to the community. And so it has a real music therapy is a big component in, you know, music preschool is a big component of what the music settlement does around Northeast Ohio. So both of those things I think are really unique, you know, things that make Northeast Ohio unique. One of the things, I mean, other than a Big Five orchestra, right, that makes the music community in Northeast Ohio and in Cleveland in particular fairly special and fairly unique.
What is your role with the Bop Stop?
I don't have one. I produce the show. And so let me tell you that story. So I was a patron and still am. And I had spent 13 years in radio, and then I left radio to actually make money. Sorry. been there. But we were at a show one night, and actually it's episode one, which was called a group called the Pulse Quartet. And one of the pieces that I heard, they're a local quartet. One of the pieces I heard was absolutely wonderful. And I said, you know, if somebody doesn't do something about this wonderful piece of inspiring music is really not going to be heard by that many people again. And that's just, that's the nature of the genre, the format, and the way in which we interact with local musicians. And so I went up to Gabe Pollock, who was the director of the Bop Stop at the time. He was also the only employee. So he was working the bar and doing the audio and taking the tickets and all of that. And I said, Gabe, you record these shows? And he said, yeah, I have all of them. And, you know, the club having been open 6 years at the time, a light bulb went off. You know, we can podcast this and we can radio show this because there just isn't a lot of live to air jazz available anymore, whether it's podcast or radio or whatever your preferred medium of delivery is. And I immediately rang up two friends, one of whom is in the radio business. He does a lot of radio software, primarily for European stations. And another one who's actually a tenured professor of statistics at Oberlin, who worked with Adam Curry with the invention of podcasts, and said, you know, we can probably turn this, if we work the right situation out, into a podcast and a radio show where we have this giant library of live to air jazz that's just not really being made available to the general public in any great form or fashion aside from you know, Jazz Night in America, right? Right. I mean, I'll say Jazz FM 91 Toronto does some live to air performances that I've actually been able to attend, you know, on my trips to Toronto, but it just wasn't something that was largely available. So that's a very long way of answering your question, which is I don't actually work for the Bop Stop, but I worked with Gabe and now Brian Kennard, who runs the Bop Stop now, to help continue to develop and roll the show out to the 33 stations and the podcast listeners on a weekly basis.
Yeah. And speaking of live at the Bop Stop, it launched in, as I understand, 2021.
Yep. January 21, just in time for COVID. Okay. Right. And so, you know, so Gabe got really lucky in the sense that he had a grant for live streaming. And he live streaming equipment, and that live streaming equipment was installed, I want to say, the fall of 2020. And so he was able to, you know, there were a few clubs. There was one in Baltimore. There's one in Atlanta. There was Gabe, where it was able to eventually, once the state of Ohio let people perform again, even if it wasn't in front of an audience, start to live stream performances. And we were able to pull those live streams and turn them into shows. And so a lot of the early editions of the show, for people who go back, I like to cite Charlie Ballantyne's first appearance, are audienceless. And so it's kind of weird to have a live performance show without an audience. But Charlie's is particularly moving, I think, because, you know, Charlie just, the only thing Charlie said the whole show was, it's just nice to be playing again and we hope everybody's okay. And it was just, you know, 58 minutes of Charlie playing guitar with his trio. And Charlie is a talented and gifted guitarist based out of Indianapolis. And so he was happy to have the gig again, have a gig again, right, during COVID. But it served multiple purposes then, right? It kept the club's name out there. It was a way for the club to continue to reach an audience. It was a way for people to continue to experience live jazz, not just through the live stream, but through the podcast and the radio version of the program as well. And the one it's funny, the one iTunes review we have is, with the exception of Gabe's introduction, it's almost like being there, which I take as a great compliment. The 5 stars was just a nice bonus.
Took this from the Music Settlements website. Mm-hmm. The venue, located in Cleveland, Ohio, is now opening its archives of live recordings to present a 1-hour weekly live jazz performance show available to non-commercial, community, educational, and jazz formatted radio stations. You've already said there are 33 radio stations on board. My question is, how did you get all of these stations on board to broadcast live at the Bop Stop?
So, spam. No, I'm kidding. but, you know, part of it is, Pete Nagley, Dr. Pete Nagley teaches at Oberlin. So WOBC was an early adopter, right? The Oberlin station took us. We're good friends with a couple of radio people. The Cleveland affiliates came pretty easy. WBWC at Baldwin Wallace, WRUW at Case Western, you know, OBC at Oberlin. The rest of it is just the dogged persistence of sending out marketing emails. And we've tried a number of things. We've tried the public radio exchange. We've done, mm-hmm. Personal networking. And it's been, you never know who's going to email you back and say, hey, I'm interested in this. And the nice part, about it, we don't do this to, there's no sponsor, right? It's a non-commercial program. We're aware that, there are thousands of community radio stations out there at this point that would benefit, from the program. So we don't cross the line and try to commercialize it. It's never been an endeavor to make money, and it never will be. And so it makes it a great, match for those types of stations. So 33 stations, 26 of them are over the air in the United States. One is over the air in Africa, and the other 6 are online, 5 of them in the UK. So it's, like I said, you never know who's going to reply and say, hey, I'm interested in this. So,
or, hey, would you like an interview?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Would you please name some of the artists who've performed at the Bop Stop?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I mean, literally everyone has come through. Not all of whom we get to broadcast. So Joey DeFrancesco was a guy who's been on the Bop Stop stage 3 or 4 times when he was alive. Oren Evans was kind enough to let us use his performance there. Snarky Puppy has been kind enough to let us use their performance there. Jamie Haddad, who runs the program at Oberlin. If you're familiar with, Jamie's a legendary percussionist, spent a lot of years working with Sting and Paul Simon, and Jamie just loves that stage. And, we have so many wonderful performances by Jamie that, I can't possibly use them all. So I'm grateful for that. A lot of regional acts, Soul Message Band comes in from Chicago. Occidental Gypsy comes in from Providence, Rhode Island. Jim Sedaro comes in fairly regularly to perform on that stage. And then there's all this local talent. Bobby Salvaggio is a guy who's put out a dozen albums, and he runs Kent State's program, so he's there. This last week was a wonderful trumpeter, comes from the Hart School of Music, named Tommy Lehman, who comes in, who's a regional act, with who comes in with a lot of, different groups and different ideas on the stage. So the stage itself has a nice mix of both local performers and national acts that come through town, not all of whom agree to be on the show, which is perfectly fine. I understand that. It's just this great venue, and Northeast Ohio, I think, is lucky because we have two of them. It's just that we use the Bop Stop for the show.
Have any of them given or led workshops or master classes at the
Yeah,
Music Settlement or the Bop Stop?
it's funny because we occasionally they do. I don't know that it happens as often as you might like. And I think, and whether that's because the artists just aren't asked because there isn't time, or because it takes a little bit of arranging to get a master class off the ground. What tends to happen more often is that artists who come in for master classes tend to do it in conjunction with one of the universities in the area, and the master class itself tends to take place at the university itself. Rather than at the club. And so, we're lucky because we have Oberlin and Kent and Akron and Cuyahoga County Community College and, Case, and all of these groups have very active jazz programs. And so to the extent that there are master classes, they tend to take place on those campuses rather than in the club.
So, Daniel, this show airs on Thursday, and scheduled at the Bop Stop is master percussionist Jamie Haddad, who you just mentioned, and he'll be with the trio. There'll be a live audience, and it will be live streamed. After performance, the show must be edited down to 58 minutes for member stations. How are you involved in that final process of editing?
I'm not. For the most part. And so what I do is I turn that part over to the core producers, which are Sean and, Sean Gilbert, who again does a lot of work for Gilazar, who produces it for us, or Pete Negley. And part of that reason is that they're the audio experts, right? And so we take that performance, you cut a lot of the silence and the crosstalk out, right? Because the music's the primary product. And if I attend the shows, which I do fairly often, I'll have an ear and I'll say, hey, maybe you might prefer this song over this song. But there's a couple things here. The radio version of the show hits 58:30 because, again, you want it to be an hour-long program. But the podcast is the extended version, which is almost always the full show. Again, chop out the silence. I mean, the things happen on stage that take some time to move from song to song. I have to shift mics around. I have to, hand somebody a drink, and there's these sort of extended awkward pauses that you want to minimize, because the podcast listener isn't going to have the benefit of the visual, right? And so it's just dead space when you're listening. But when it comes to getting it down to 58 minutes 30 seconds, you have to get it down to 58 minutes 30 seconds. So you can only keep what fits. And so in that sense, it's a jigsaw puzzle. And so my responsibility relative to the show, to in being what I would consider the executive producer, is to deal with the financial end of it, work with now Brian Kinnard to say, okay, Brian, this is what a season is to us. What artists do you think, that sort of collaborative conversation about what artists make up a good season. And then, make sure that the structure of the show is such that we get the most out of the performances that we have. But the actual editing, that's Sean's vision or Pete's vision, depending upon the episode.
Okay, so you put a lot of stock and trust in them.
Yes, and we I think it's paid off. So that's one thing. But you know, I mean, they have we all the funny thing about the Gil the folks at Gilazar, Sean and Pete, is we all in another lifetime back when I was in college, when we were dodging dinosaurs to get to class. We no, okay. We all worked together at WXUT in Toledo, Ohio. I managed the station, and Pete and Sean did production for me, among other things. And so I know their ears because I've worked with their ears off and on since 1993. So it's an easy trust exercise. And again, everybody's on board with the same ethos for the show. And I don't want this to sound like a criticism, but when you hear an episode of Jazz Night in America, what you hear is perfect. And that's by design. The producers work with the artists to say, okay, this is perfect. For me, and I think for us, the imperfections that come with a live performance are okay. They're part of the design. Now, if an artist really says, "Hey, I had to restart that song. Can you cut the restart?" Yeah, that makes sense, right? I don't, you don't want to. And once in a while, if something is really off key or it just doesn't work, yeah, okay, you should probably take that out. Or if there's a profanity, okay, well, can't have that. I mean, that's got to go. And there have been some of the more adventurous shows, in particular, the Unc D program, which I think took place during season four. There is a fantastic vocalist who was a guest vocalist on that show, and that song was littered with profanities. I'm like, I can't air this. I just can't. I'm like, and so I went up to the guy. I saw him at one of the club anniversary parties a few months later. I'm like, man, listen, your vocals were terrific, and I really wish I could have aired it, but there were just profanities all over the place. Please come back and sing again because it was fantastic. And you want to be encouraging in that situation. But yeah, no, we can't can't do that. So you do have to have that sort of editing ear when when you're putting these things together. But other than that, it's a trust exercise, and Sean and Pete have both done a great job.
Wow. Yeah. So, Daniel, we're interviewing you and I on Monday of this week. The Bop Stop will be hosting Outlab, Experiments in Improvised Music, tonight. Musicians, and I'm quoting from the website again, with open ears are invited to bring instruments or any sound-making device and explore collective group improvisation. Is one of the goals of this monthly laboratory community engagement?
Oh yeah, there are three actually. The Bop Stop does three of these types of shows. That's one of them, which is essentially an open, entirely experimental. Bring what you're writing, bring what you're playing, bring what you got, and it'll turn into this sort of cacophony that either works or doesn't. That's one. And Brent Kirby's 10 by 3, which is the next night, is a singer-songwriter version of that. Right? It's 10 singer-songwriters who come in with three songs a piece, and one of them has to be an original, and they sing, right? The Friday night jam sessions are a little bit different because those tend to be, either students from, I was about to use the word kids to give away my age, but they're students from universities or folks in the community that like to play. Or whatever, and they just come in and they jam, and those tend to be standards based, right? We're calling standards because that's what we learn first. And all of those things, I think, engage different parts of the community to sort of foster this, foster this creative spirit that's fairly unique to Northeast Ohio and what it's composed of. And I think that's part of what the Bop Stop's ethos has been. It was that way under Gay Pollock. It continues to be that way under Brian Kennard. And I think Brian is even more of a composer at heart than Gabe was. And so I would anticipate that these things get stronger as Brian becomes more familiar with the club and its place in the community.
And that brings me to my last question of how do you view the role of the Bop Stop in the Cleveland, Ohio community?
It is a I'm going to give you a really long answer to that because I want to talk about Cleveland because I'm not a native, and I think that that's whether it's Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Chicago, Detroit, they're all what I would consider parochial markets with slightly different opinions of themselves. The joke I like to make about Cleveland is it can't dance and it isn't funny, but it loves music, and that's true. And so the Bop Stop, and I want to make sure to mention Blue Down in Akron, because we're all part of the same umbrella, are really two jazz, predominantly jazz listening rooms, where not only will you see groups that are, or artists who are of a degree of national renown, but there are local people and local performers, and there are regional performers who come in and they will try stuff, because this is a market where it's okay to make mistakes, because Clevelanders inherently love music. This is a music town, so it doesn't have to be perfect music. In that sense, particularly with jazz, I find it a little bit different than Chicago, which is a little bit more demanding, at least on my travels and in my experience. And so those venues in particular for jazz are ones that sort of serve as twin heartbeats for the community relative to that genre. And again, it's the things that we just talked about that I think are at the core of that. It's the jam session, it's 10 by 3, it's Outlab, it's those opportunities for people to come in and experiment and be welcomed, and just for people to essentially hang out until ungodly hours in the morning and just play with each other, instrumentally and musically. And those things serve an important role within the community and in keeping and developing the arts community in Northeast Ohio, which is, I found to be outsized for the market.
My guest was Daniel Peck, executive producer and host of Live at the Bop Stop. For more information, themusicsettlement.org/bop-stop.
I grew up in Detroit, around Detroit, with WJZZ. And this was back when WJZZ would just play live jazz all night. So I had it my whole life. And then, you wake up one morning and you're going up and it's just a smooth jazz station all the time. And so, and then, that disappeared. And so, to me, having a live jazz show on the radio is sort of an important way for people to connect with the genre. And it's very different than the smooth jazz listening experience. It's very different than the, than going and just pulling a random thing off of Spotify where it just kind of blends into the background. To me, jazz is really most effectively experienced live, or, or live to air, or, a lot of most of the recordings that we would consider, the classics were live to tape, right? They were these sort of live experiences. And once you started to move away from that, the genre becomes, I think, a little bit more challenging to relate to and appreciate in the way that it was meant to be, for lack of a better way to put it. So live jazz is a passion of mine for that reason. And my hope with the show and the podcast is that people strengthen their connections to the genre through it.
You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. For more information about the show, jazzfluxus.com.
Five. And he was six. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down. Seasons came and changed the time. When I grew up, I called him mine. He would always laugh and say, remember when we used to play? Bang, bang, I shot you down. Bang, bang, you hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, I used to shoot you down. Sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye. He didn't take the time to lie. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. My baby shot me down.
We'll be right back.
To new releases out tomorrow, Friday, January 20th. Pianist Mike LaDon and tenor saxophonist Eric Alexander co-leading the sextet The Heavy Hitters from its eponymous album on Cellar Music Group. We're listening to the Alexander composition, This Is Something New. Before this, recorded live at Small's Jazz Club in New York City, bassist Tyler Mitchell and saxophonist and bandleader of the Sun Ra Orchestra, Marshall Allen, with the Sun Ra tune Love in Outer Space, from the release Sun Ra's Journey. Mitchell leads an octet featuring Marshall. This is being released through Cellar Music Group and the Small's Live Living Masters series. The Smalls Live Living Masters Series is funded entirely by grants from the Smalls Live Foundation, the Cellar Music Group's not-for-profit art foundation founded in 2018, and from the ensemble George, drummer and composer John Hollenbach, tenor saxophonist and flute player Anna Weber, vocalist, reed player, and keyboardist Aurora Nieland, and keyboardist, pianist, and vocalist Chiquita Magic, out on January 27th with their out-of-your-head release, Letters to George. That was the pop tune written by singer Sonny Bono, Bang Bang, My Baby Shot Me Down. And we'll end today's show with a solo piano performance by Tony Ragusis, taken from trumpeter Michael Morreale's release of 2019, Stories of Recent Vintage, Volume 3. It was re-released last year by Blue Jazz. We'll hear Bill Must Have Played This. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for and airing on WGXC 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WGXC. WGXC.org. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you.